Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the Voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Agriculture Report and Science in the News, coming up after As It Is.
Hello and welcome back. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. Let's learn some American English and find out some interesting things about our world at the same time. Today, we hear about illegal immigration in the United States. This is about people who have come to live in America but have not obeyed the country's citizenship laws. Then, we have another story about the U.S. The highest court in the land has just decided that minority students may not get the help they have been given for years when it comes to getting into college. Immigration and education, two very important subjects, presented in the Learning English style, are coming your way. The United States has expelled about 2 million illegal immigrants in the 5 years since Barack Obama has been president. Some Americans say the Obama administration is too aggressive in enforcing immigration law, but others say it has not been aggressive enough. Greg Chen is with the American Immigration Lawyers Association. He says the Obama administration is expelling illegal immigrants from the country in record numbers.
Those numbers under both President Bush and Obama have increased steadily in the past decade and are currently at a real high point. So overall, it's important to recognize that the administration has been incredibly robust in its enforcement practices.
But others say the number of people being expelled is down. John Feary works for the Center for Immigration Studies.
What we need to see is a serious commitment to immigration enforcement. We need to see deportation numbers actually going up instead of going down as they are now. But thus far, the White House just doesn't seem all that serious about immigration enforcement.
How can the same numbers be seen so differently? Because of the difference between what the government calls returns and removals. The number of returns, immigrants seized at the border and sent back home, has dropped over the past 10 years. But the number of removals has risen to an all-time high. The term removals means immigrants who have been officially expelled and barred from returning to the United States. John Feary is concerned that the combined totals of returns and removals is down.
So if you're looking at this idea of removals, which is a type of deportation, the numbers do appear to be going up slightly, but if you look at overall deportation numbers, which is removals plus returns, which occur along the border, you see that the numbers are actually going down.
But Greg Chen says the government is still taking steps against illegal immigration.
The thing to recognize is that President Obama has increased the border presence, and he has made the actual outcomes, the consequences of having been apprehended and deported out of the country, more severe by having a greater number of removals.
Jim Tom Haynes has worked for a long time as an immigration lawyer. He says fewer new deportation cases are going to immigration courts. Such courts, he adds, already have far more cases than they can deal with.
The cases that do get into the court are taking years to get through. So I think that you would have fewer deportations now simply because the courts can't process all this work.
The debate over whether more or less enforcement is needed is likely to influence any effort to reform the U.S. immigration system. It may also affect the result of the congressional elections in November. The United States Supreme Court ruled in an affirmative action case last week. The court said the state of Michigan has a right to stop public colleges and universities from considering a person's race
when they decide which students to admit. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has been following the case, and June Sims has his report.
The Supreme Court agreed with the right of Michigan voters to bar public colleges and universities from considering race on admissions decisions. Michigan voters approved the ban as an amendment to the state's constitution in 2006. Affirmative action programs have long sought to help racial and ethnic minorities compete and gain acceptance to American colleges and universities. But over the years, such programs have also been the subject of much political debate. Susanna Sherry is a law professor at the Vanderbilt Law School in Tennessee. She says reaction to the decision may be limited because the court was concerned mainly about the right of voters to express their opinion.
What the court held is that the voters of Michigan are allowed to decide whether they want affirmative action or not. And that's really not a ruling on affirmative action. It's a case about whether affirmative action is required. And the answer is no, it's not required. People can decide, the people of Michigan can decide not to engage in it.
The Supreme Court voted 6-2 to support the ban. Justice Sonia Sotomayor was one of the two justices in the minority. She said judges should face the racial inequality that exists in the United States and not just sit back and wish it would go away. The American Civil Liberties Union also criticized the ruling. The group said the Michigan law unfairly keeps students from asking universities to consider race in their admissions decisions. But a group of conservative African Americans praised the decision. The group is called Project 21. It said the ruling moved the country closer to the ideas expressed by the former civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. California and Washington State have voter-approved laws banning affirmative action in education admissions. A few other states also have laws or executive orders barring race as a consideration. B.C. Okubadejo is a lawyer. She has represented colleges and universities in civil rights cases. She predicts limited legal effects from the Supreme Court ruling.
It's likely that this action by the Supreme Court will bolster other groups that continue to file similar suits. It's not representing a step forward with regard to the use of race. But it, taken in context, I think that any negative effects on diversity and the use of race on campus has already occurred in the states where voters have spoken at the polls.
Supporters of affirmative action programs say they have helped many minorities, but they note that the number of African American and Hispanic students has dropped at the University of Michigan since the ban took effect. I'm June Sims.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. Before we step aside for more Learning English programs, we invite you to have a piece of birthday cake as we celebrate the birth anniversary of one of America's greatest songwriters and performers. On this date in 1899, not far from where I am sitting, Edward Kennedy Duke Ellington was born. He started playing music professionally when he was 17. He is perhaps best known as the leader of a big band that played his beautiful, complex, and sophisticated kind of jazz. Duke wrote for motion pictures, operas, ballets, and Broadway shows. When Duke died in 1974, one of VOA's own was at his funeral. Willis Conover was there to say goodbye to his good friend. So we will leave you with the song that Duke and Willis made famous. The title says the quickest way to get to Harlem, then the home of so many great jazz clubs in New York City, was to take the A train.
The Agriculture Report is next, followed by Science in the News. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Agriculture Report. Have you ever wondered what the average American farmer looks like? A new report says he is a 58-year-old white man. That information comes from the United States Census Bureau, a government agency that collects and studies information about the nation's population and economy. The report also says farmers 65 and older are the fastest growing population group. As these farmers retire, American agriculture will experience big changes. The report suggests what some of those changes might look like and why they might not be so bad. Adrian Gibson works a small piece of land in the rolling hills north of Knoxville, Tennessee. She is something of a new face in American agriculture. First of all, she's a woman. And secondly, she's a minority. And she is succeeding in an industry controlled mostly by white men. But the Census Bureau report suggests that may be changing. The number of minority farmers working American soil is growing, and fast. The report also suggests that U.S. farms are getting smaller. Adrian Gibson earns money by using a community-supported agriculture, or CSA, model of farming. As a CSA farmer, she raises food for a handful of buyers who agree to pay her before her crops are ready.
We have 23 CSA customers. They subscribe to supporting the farm, and in return, they get a weekly basket of vegetables from May through October.
Nate Phillips teaches farming at Middle Tennessee State University. He says smaller farms are partly a reaction to changes in the way Americans think about their food.
This growing interest in where our food's coming from, what is the food quality, things like that. And I think we'll continue to see that increase.
This movement is often called farm to table. It means that more Americans are starting to buy food that is grown locally, and they want to know exactly where their food is coming from. Nate Phillips adds that more young people are entering farming because of this trend.
I'm seeing a lot more students from Nashville or the cities that are coming in that didn't grow up around agriculture, weren't from an agricultural background, but have that interest.
Nate Phillips thinks it is good that the people who grow food are beginning to look more like the people who eat it.
It reflects our general society. It reflects what our communities are like around us, and I think that's a great thing for agriculture.
And that's the Agriculture Report. I'm Anna Mateo.
From VOA Learning English, This is Science in the News. I'm Faith Lapidus.
And I'm Mario Ritter. Today, we tell about herbs and spices and some of their many uses.
People have been using herbs and spices for thousands of years. Generally, herbs come from the green leaves of plants or vegetables. Spices come from other parts of plants and trees. Some herbs and spices are valued for their taste. They help to sharpen the taste of many foods. Others are chosen for their smell. Still others were used traditionally for health reasons.
When people think of improving their diet, they often talk about eating more fruits and vegetables. Others want to eat more fish and less red meat, in addition to reducing the amount of food they eat. But they can improve their diets even more with just a simple addition. American researchers have found that a diet rich in spices can help reduce the harmful effects of eating high-fat meals. Researchers at Pennsylvania State University reported the findings. Penn State Associate Professor Sheila West led an investigation of the health effects of a spice-rich diet. Her team knew that a high-fat meal produces high levels of triglycerides, a kind of fat in the blood. She said, "If this happens too frequently, or if triglyceride levels are raised too much, your risk of heart disease is increased." We found that adding spices to a high-fat meal reduced triglyceride response by about 30% compared to a similar meal with no spices added.
As part of the study, her team prepared meals on two separate days for six men between the ages of 30 and 65. The men were overweight but healthy. The researchers added about 30 milliliters of spices to each serving of the test meal, which included chicken curry, Italian herb bread, and a cinnamon biscuit. The meal for the control group was the same, but it did not include any spices. Ann Skoulis Ray also served on the research team. She said the team used paprika, rosemary, oregano, cinnamon, turmeric, black pepper, cloves, and garlic powder. She said these spices were chosen because they had demonstrated strong antioxidant activity under controlled conditions in a laboratory. During the experiment, the researchers removed blood from the men every 30 minutes for 3 hours. They found that antioxidant activity in the blood of the men who ate the spicy meal was 13% higher than it was for the men who did not. In addition, insulin activity dropped by about 20% in the men who ate the spicy food.
Sheila West says many scientists think that oxidative stress leads to heart disease, arthritis, and diabetes. And what exactly is oxidative stress? Think of an apple that has been cut in half and set aside for half an hour or so. The cut side of the apple turns brown. That is a simple explanation of what happens when oxidative stress comes in contact with the inside and outside of our bodies. Professor West says antioxidants, like spices, may be important in reducing oxidative stress and thus reducing the risk of chronic disease. She adds that the level of spices used in the study provided the same amount of antioxidants found in 150 milliliters of red wine, or about 38 grams of dark chocolate.
Other scientists are helping to uncover the secrets of spices and herbs. For example, Purdue University researchers in Indiana say red pepper may help people lose weight. They say this could be especially true for people who do not usually add peppers to their food. The researchers reported on the effects of dried and ground cayenne red pepper in the journal Physiology and Behavior in 2011. They found that small changes in diet, like adding the pepper, may reduce the desire to eat. Most chili peppers contain capsaicin, a substance that makes chili peppers taste hot and spicy. Other studies have shown that capsaicin can reduce hunger and burn calories, the energy stored in food.
25 people of normal weight took part in the study, which lasted 6 weeks. 13 of them liked spicy food. The 12 others did not. The researchers decided how much red pepper each group would receive. 1 8/10 grams of the pepper was given to each person who liked spicy food. The others received 3/10 of a gram. The people who did not normally eat red pepper showed a decreased desire for food. That was especially true for fatty, salty, and sweet foods. Purdue University professor Richard Mattis said the effect may be true only for people who do not usually eat red pepper. He said the effectiveness of the pepper may be lost if spices are normally part of a person's diet, and that more studies must be done.
Other research shows that capsaicin helps suppress the buildup of body fat. A study published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition found that capsaicin may help to reduce abdominal fat. Study organizers said the reduction possibly takes place because the spice changes some proteins found in fat, causing them to break down the fat. Scientists have become so interested in the health value of spices that recent discoveries are helping to move spices from traditional medicine into real science. Researchers in Virginia discovered that curcumin, a substance found in turmeric, stopped the Rift Valley fever virus from reproducing in infected cells. The sometimes deadly virus is carried by mosquitoes. It can affect human beings and some farm animals like cattle and goats.
Arthi Narayanan is an assistant professor at George Mason University in Virginia. She was the lead investigator in a study of curcumin. She says her team of researchers found the spice may interfere with the way some viruses cause human cells to stop reacting to an infection. She hopes the team can discover drug treatments to defeat several kinds of viruses. And, she says, it is possible curcumin will be part of those cures. A study published in the Journal of Biological Chemistry found that curcumin improves the effectiveness of chemotherapy in breast cancer patients. And it has possibilities for development into a drug that can help with chemotherapy.
Turmeric comes from a tropical plant common to India. Scientists have been examining its medical possibilities for many years. Studies show that turmeric's qualities may help protect against damage to the body's tissues and other injuries. Researchers also said turmeric may reduce evidence of damage in the brains of patients with mild or moderate Alzheimer's disease. For this reason, the researchers designed a study that examined results from a mental performance test of older Asian adults. The study involved curry, which contains turmeric. The adults tested were 60 to 93 years old. Those who sometimes ate curry did better on the tests than individuals who rarely or never ate curry. This was also true of those who ate it often or very often.
One spice that often is at the top of a healthy spices list is cinnamon. It comes from the inner bark of several trees and is used in both sweet and savory cooking. For centuries, cinnamon has been used in traditional medicine. Now, it is earning respect in the medical field. German researchers found that cinnamon can reduce blood sugar by 10%. They were not sure why, but said it could be that substances in cinnamon activate enzymes that excite insulin receptors. Research also shows the spice can help lower levels of cholesterol and triglycerides, blood fats that may cause diabetes. Registered dietitian Wendy Bazillion says spices are being considered more seriously because the added taste they bring helps people reduce the salt, fat, and sugar in their cooking. She has written a book called The Superfoods RX Diet on how people can lose weight by basing their diet on what she calls super nutrients. She says she likes oregano, for example, because she considers it a mini salad. She says one teaspoon has as much antioxidant power as 3 cups of chopped broccoli. But, she says, do not get rid of the broccoli. Instead, eat both. Herbs and spices are not used just to lessen unwanted chemical effects. They make food taste better. Some spices also destroy bacteria. Spices have long been used to keep food safe to eat. Spices have influenced world history.
This Science in the News program was written by Milagro Sardin. Our producer was June Sims. I'm Faith Lapidus.
And I'm Mario Ritter. Join us again next week for more news about science on The Voice of America.